Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up with you, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a good day. I love tweaking Oklahoma fans. It's such a favorite pastime. It's so good. Usually, and I want to get to an NFL team who just looks awful. But usually, we spend Mondays only talking about the NFL. The NFL is big. I mean, here's how big the NFL is. That Thursday game, Cowboys and Raiders, 38 million people watched. Right? Like, this is crazy. But Saturday was so good. Now, here's my question to you, Jason Stewart, and to you, Dan Beyer. Like, I felt like Saturday was amazing because the Michigan game, the visuals of it, like, it looked like they were playing in a snow globe. Right? And the fact that Michigan just lined up and kicked their ass. Like, I thought the whole thing was great. And then Oklahoma State's game was crazy. Like, they did everything in their power to give away the game in the first half and then just came up with stop after stop after stop defensively, which is what their team is built around in the second half. Great comeback. And then you had the Auburn-Alabama game where Auburn dominated the game and only to lose in, was it triple, quadruple? I lose track of the overtimes because once they get past the second overtime, now it becomes just two-point conversion, which I don't really like, but I think other people do. It's like, let's just get this thing over with. And then you have every other game in between. But I guess here's the question to you, Beyer, and you're a noted Ohio State fan, is did I enjoy it truthfully just because Oklahoma State won, or am I like everybody else where it was just a great day of college football?
I think it's because Oklahoma State won, because it was a miserable day of college football for me. And so the rest of it didn't matter for a lot of different reasons. But when your team wins, then you can savor everything else that happened. But when your team loses, the rest doesn't matter.
Okay. I will tell you, I took special pleasure, and you and I have worked together for 4.5 years, so you can back this up. You know, Jason Stewart's only worked for a couple months, but Ramos has as well, the entire 4.5 years. I feel like me and Joel Klatt have been the lone guys. Cowherd came in this year, was like, see, told you, but that's the classic Cowherd. Cowherd was going along with the, what has Harbaugh done? You know, Clay Travis and these most overrated coach of all time. Thing, whatever. And again, winning one game doesn't make you the greatest coach ever. It's that program has evolved and become still a step below Ohio State, but I think separated themselves from the rest of the league in being the best of everybody else. And the last thing that they needed to do was to beat Ohio State. And this only playing at home felt like the year. Ohio State came in playing great football. There, everybody would conclude they're better at wide receiver and better at quarterback, and the rest is kind of a push in between. I think it's at least partially, I agree with you, the Oklahoma State thing makes me feel better about my school, and just and losing Lincoln Riley afterwards feels amazing. It just does, because I think he's a great coach. But I think the Michigan thing, I had stood by the Harbaugh deal the entire time I've worked at Fox. Am I lying there?
No, I don't think you're lying. Yeah.
What went wrong for Ohio State in your mind?
A lot. I mean, I think that while Ohio State played better in the second half of the season, it was the dominant win against Michigan State that I think everybody said, okay, this thing is on track. However, if you look at their Penn State game, what Purdue did to them offensively, they were not good on defense. And I would argue that Michigan was better than Ohio State on every level on defense. Up front, I mean, Ohio State's best linebacker is a converted running back in the secondary. And we're at the end of the season, so young players I don't think matters anymore when you're 12 games into a career. Michigan, I thought, was better on every single part when it comes to defense. And when you dominate like they did, 7 yards per carry, it's tough to stop. Michigan, you know, dominated that game. Conditions didn't help Ohio State when it's snowy and wind chill and, you know, low 20s and you have a passing game that is how you usually make your hay. Stacked up against Ohio State, but that wasn't the reason that they lost. They lost because Michigan was just way more physical than they were on both sides of the football.
Yeah, no, I mean, the defense was impressive. And honestly, that's kind of the part where we've gotten to this mindset that no one can be stopped in college football, be it the rules or be it the quarterback play or offenses or the spacing of it. And the truth is that as much as Georgia overwhelms people and offensively they have a lot of talent, the defense is ridiculous. Oklahoma State's defense is outstanding. Michigan's defense is outstanding. And I think that's what separates those teams. That's what makes them kind of elite teams. But it made it for a fun Saturday. The visuals are amazing with college football. Like that felt like being played in a snow globe.
Yeah, I mean, it was what people think. And honestly, you don't get that a lot. You don't get snow flurries in late November a lot of times in college football. And you had that on Saturday. I would caution on the Michigan is back fully sort of train. I still think that there's more work to do for them, including this Saturday. I think they'll beat Iowa, but you know that is something.
Yeah, gotta complete the task.
Yeah, I mean Michigan State's made it to a college football playoff before.
It feels sustainable with Michigan. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because historically those sort of programs, once they figure it out, they figure it out and they're good for a long time. That was the only thing you could have used against Michigan was like, hey, they ain't beat Ohio State. I guess the other one is they haven't won a Big Ten championship. Now if they do, again, that doesn't put them on the level of with Ohio State. If that's what you think I'm saying, I would agree with
you. No, I'm not saying that at all, but I think that it was a great afternoon for Michigan and it's been a really great season and they're very close to being unbeaten. But there's also something to following up. And I'll even just use Michigan State as the other example of not only did they make a college football playoff, D'Antonio took them to a Rose Bowl. Like there's been success that, you know, Michigan, you know, has, yeah, maybe this part puts them even there. But to say that there's a separation, I still think that there's work to do. You need to get this to this step, but I would just caution on being, yeah, that Michigan is now maybe second to those to the schools.
And it's funny, and I don't know if you pointed this out on Twitter. Forgive me, Dan, if you
I stayed
did.
Off Twitter on Saturday.
It's on Sunday. I want to transition to Sunday. By the way, TracFone Wireless gives you control of your wireless plan. No contract, unlimited talk, text, smartphone plan starting at $20 a month. Plus, get unlimited carryover data so you keep what you don't use. All America's largest, most dependable networks. Sunday, we saw Pittsburgh just get disemboweled by the Cincinnati Bengals for a second time this year. Second time this year. So the question becomes like, shouldn't we have seen this coming, right? And maybe we didn't believe it the first time. We're like, well, you know, it's early in the year. Now they're figuring it out. But Pittsburgh, they honestly got their asses kicked by the Chargers, not for the Chargers, like trying to hand them the game back on the platter. Like this is who Pittsburgh is. They're not a good football team.
Yeah.
Like here's what we have to remember, okay? The Browns have been, their wins are over the Broncos, who, and I know the Broncos beat the Chargers. Broncos are not a good club. Okay. The Seahawks, who, this is as bad as Seahawks been in a decade. The Browns, who are a dysfunctional mess, and they were completely banged up even when they beat Pittsburgh. The Bears, come on. The Lions, they tied, worst team in the NFL. The Chargers, the final score is not indicative. The Chargers put up 41 points, and they were up two touchdowns, and they did everything in there. They did everything they can to hand the game to the Steelers. The Steelers still couldn't win the game. The Bengals beat them 41-10, but like the Bengals beat them 24-10 and felt like, I'm sure, they left some points out in the field, but it's back in week three. Like, there's just no getting around it. They're not good. And they finished the year with Ravens at Vikings, Titans at Chiefs, Browns, like at Ravens. Like, yikes. And Ben Roethlisberger can't play football anymore. Zach Taylor said, you know, everything went right. But it's really the Bengals are just better than the Steelers. And this is, I mean, like, look, this was the fear for Pittsburgh. They knew it was going to be kind of a gap year. if you get rid of Ben, you're still paying the freight. You keep Ben, you know he's got limitations. And they couldn't on the fly fix the whole team around him. And they've been able to do smoke and mirrors. But at some point, you just run up on teams that are better than you are. And that's the Bengals. Teams that are at about their level, right? They're able to compete with because he's an outstanding coach and they got some really good pieces on defense. Right? They're able to be competitive with the Broncos, with the Seahawks, with the Browns, and the Browns are banged up, with the Bears, with the Lions. But teams that just have they're just better. Chargers, Bengals, Raiders, when they were healthy, Packers, not really competitive. That's who the Steelers are. That's what 9 games gives us, or 11 games in their case gives us. We got a true sense of who they are. They're 5-5-1, which honestly might be the best coaching job of Mike Tomlin's career. I'm going to show you why you should listen closely when I make my football picks each week.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Check out the latest lines from the world of sports. BetRivers Sportsbook. BetRivers is the trusted name in online sports betting. You got to be 21, present in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Virginia, or Pennsylvania to play. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Tonight's line, this one's a really hard one, okay? Seattle generally stinks, but they have Russell Wilson, and they're taking on the Washington football team who, remember, made the playoffs at below 500 last year, but gave Tampa a heck of a game, and they got Taylor Heineke back there, who's like a poor man's Russell Wilson, right? Runs around, undersized, runs around back there, makes plays. But their team is built upon their defensive line, and their best player is Chase Young, and Chase Young's out for the year. Byer, who do you like? Seahawks, your boys, favored by a point.
Yeah, I know that they have Russell Wilson, but over the last couple of weeks, it has not been a good thing for them. It'll be close, obviously, as you said. The line is -1 for Seattle. I'll take the Seahawks to pull out what I think will be an uninspiring Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, I mean, this is one. I don't know if I'm allowed. I think I'm allowed to do this. It's my show, right? Like, I don't think I have a pick.
I wouldn't bet anything
on it.
I felt like
in your voice, that's what you're saying. You're like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't like.
Yeah, it's one of those things as well. You talk about head and heart. As much as I want to believe, like I thought when Russell Wilson came back against the Packers, all right, this is going to it's gonna get back on track, no limitations. Not only were there limitations to not get back on track, and then the following week against Arizona, it was much of the same. And I just don't know what changes. I don't know if you can let Russ cook. I'm not sure that's
the best thing. I think you got to figure out a way to get the ball to Lockett and to
– Yeah.
What's his name?
DK Metcalf.
Metcalf.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, just – it just feels so obvious. But, again, like, it's not just obvious to us. It's obvious to Washington as well.
They are. Yeah, it's – you talk about Washington's injuries is, you know, what they're dealing with defensively. And there's an argument could be made that Washington's the better offensive team. And what at least Washington has showed in the last couple of weeks with their win against Tampa Bay, it's been more impressive than what Seattle has done. It is a home game for Washington. There are a lot of reasons to go with Washington, I think, in this game, especially if you've watched the Seahawks over the last couple of weeks.
I know.
Yeah.
It's also the NFL, in which what we saw last week does not necessarily apply to this week.
Correct.
All right. Well, look, I'm just going to tell you right now, I don't have a pick. I would probably lean Washington only because they're at home and they have played better of late. But I also realize I think Seattle, like as much as Terry McLaurin's very good, I think, you know, you have two-headed monster there for Seattle. And I mean, I think Russell's better than Heineke. That said, I just have no, they're just, I don't know where this team's head is. That just so weird that when Russell came back, they had a clear opportunity to make the playoffs and they got worse, not better. It just doesn't make sense.
I'll be fully honest with you. I am in a picks thing, you know, that a lot of people do, and I did pick Washington tonight.
A suicide pool?
No, just a
you just had to pick the games.
Yeah, just a pick sort of thing. And so for my entry this week, I did pick Washington.
All right. Well, my picks this weekend were good. I was 4-1.
Yeah, you're on fire. Yeah.
4-1 in the NFL and 4-0-1 in college, which leads us to
get everybody on message.
And now.
A ticker tape parade? Like what?
I told you so.
Why? Because he had talent.
Finally nailed it, Gottlieb.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so how did I get to 4-0-1? Well, I went through games and I just, I don't know, tried to figure it out. Nebraska 3-8. 3-8 at home, favored against Iowa that was 9-2, which led me to this pick. First pick is going to be Iowa. Granted, much better at home than they have been on the road. That's any idiot on radio, and I'm one of the idiots on radio, can tell you as such. But to me, this that pick is easy. Easy. Give me Iowa. It was the, no, look, Nebraska put up a fight as they had all year, but they weren't going to win. They don't know how to win games. So that one was easy against the money line. So that was kind of a pick and a half. Okay, I've been into Michigan for a long time. Of course, I was hesitant to think they could beat Ohio State because they hadn't done it in a decade. But they did. Here are my thoughts. Ohio State's dominated Michigan since Jim Harbaugh's been there. And Ohio State looks like they're playing the best football of the year. Man, Chris Olave is a hell of a player. They're better at quarterback. How has Michigan, they scored 59 in their own rights, beaten Penn State, lost to Michigan State? How have they won all these games? In the trenches. I actually think this matchup fits Michigan well. I don't know if they can win the game. I think it'll be very close. I'm going to take Michigan and those 8 points as of right now. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Okay. Michigan State played Penn State. I took the Spartans. Here's why. Michigan State just embarrassed at the hands of Ohio State. They take out a Penn State team who kind of similar to Michigan State. Look, this is the same Penn State team that lost to Iowa, Illinois, and Ohio State. Granted, you know, they had backup quarterback. Lost to Michigan 21-17. This one's at Michigan State. Spartans are an underdog, so you can get the money line. Give me Michigan State to win that game. And to complete my sweep of Big Ten picks, I give you Minnesota in the Paul Bunyan's Axe game. Minnesota is a 7-point underdog. It's a Minnesota team that I do feel like I've seen this Minnesota team play for years, right? Because you saw that first Ohio State game. They lost a close one to Illinois, close one to Iowa. It's a rivalry game. Don't they play for Paul Bunyan's Axe? I think Minnesota keeps it close. 7 points too many. If you can get a hook in it, if you can get 7 and a hook, you'll be even happier. Give me Minnesota. Why don't you? Give me Minnesota. All right, I'll stick Oklahoma State, who pushed with Oklahoma. It went over the 50 and a half points. The second half is what most people thought the whole game would look like. In the NFL, I thought the Bengals over Pittsburgh was easy. It was. I thought the Patriots over Tennessee was easy. It was. 7 points wasn't enough. The Packers were underdogs at home against the Rams. That one was weird. They led kick to finish. And the Niners were 4-point favorites against Minnesota. That one was needlessly close. Minnesota did have the ball late, but the Niners end up covering. And then my only loss was my loss. Was the did I take the Chargers? No, I didn't take the Chargers. Who did I take? Oh, it was the Bears? Yeah, I took the Bears. Joel Klatt in a moment. We'll get to the Lincoln Riley talk, the college football playoff talk. All right, so you saw that about Brian Kelly. Look, Notre Dame is classically seen as cheap. Okay, remember, there was a time Urban Meyer interviewed for Notre Dame before he interviewed for the Florida job, and Florida offered him twice as much money as Notre Dame. Needless to say, he took the Florida job, won 2 national championships, rest is history. My guess is whatever Brian Kelly makes in the $5 or $6 million variety, you're starting to talk about the $9 or $10 million variety. Like, it's an absolute no-brainer. And so you leverage the LSU job. That's what you do. And if Notre Dame wants to pay, they'll keep their guy. If they don't, he leaves. And then I would guess that's a Matt Campbell job. But you know who would know? Joe Klatt would know. He calls the game of the week. He called the big game. He was there, Michigan, Ohio State. He, like me, hadn't jumped off the Harbaugh bandwagon when so many others had. Okay, so what happened? How did Michigan just kick Ohio State's ass? How'd that happen?
I mean, physically. They just handed it to them. They wanted it more. That offensive line was tremendous. I mean, Doug, they didn't have to punt in the second half, and it wasn't like they were having to convert a bunch of third and longs to do it. The quarterback didn't have to be great, Cade McNamara. It's so fascinating to me because in the end, you know, Harbaugh went to Michigan, had a lot of success with his original blueprint, which was power football, play great defense, and he felt like he had to chase the spread offense because of what was going on in this matchup against Ohio State. And in reality, even though he did get Josh Gattis conformed to what Harbaugh used to do, which was power football, and what he actually needed was a little bit of defensive help, this time in the form of Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald and I had a long conversation last week before the game. And you know, you used to call games, and you'll know just from being in broadcasting. In my seat, you always have regrets of, like, things you could have said or wish that you would have said during the broadcast. And one of the things that I wish I would have discussed during the broadcast was that Mike and I had a long discussion about Bill Belichick's game plan against Sean McVay in the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl and how he felt like that style of game plan was going to be something similar to what he really dreamed of. And obviously that one was a terrific game plan, but it was about building a wall up front for the run and then keeping safeties deep so that they didn't allow the big play. And he felt like that was going to frustrate the offensive personnel and play calling for Ohio State, and ended up happening. So to answer your original question, Harbaugh got back to what he always did, which was power football on offense. And then he has adjusted over the last couple of years, and he found an NFL-oriented defensive coordinator that ended up developing and building a game plan that was very NFL-esque against an offense that had not been slowed down much all season.
Let's go to Oklahoma State. First half was wild, right? Wild. Felt like Caleb Williams kind of picking them apart, plus Oklahoma State, you know, fumbling, like doing everything in their power. And they fumbled early in the second half. Just doing everything in their power to keep Oklahoma in the game. It ends up being tied at the half. Second half, no offensive touchdowns for OU. None. And this is a series which has been dominated by Oklahoma's offense. And we always knew, everybody knew Oklahoma State's defense was good. But if we're honest, they hadn't played against the level of talent that Oklahoma's played, right? Didn't play a great out-of-conference schedule. And the conference schedule, like, they kind of benefited that. It's different when you're playing Oklahoma. What changed with that Oklahoma State defense where they went from the first half kind of chasing OU to the second half really frustrating them?
Yeah, so this one was inside football or baseball, if you want to say it that way. Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator for Oklahoma State, I'm sure you've brought him up or talked about him a little bit, and I know we have briefly. He's an unbelievably good defensive coordinator, and he's up for the Broyles Award as the top assistant in college football, and he should win that award this year because of what he's been able to do. And Doug, what he was able to do was build over the course of years a very smart and aggressive defense that was able to confuse not only Lincoln Riley, but Caleb Williams. And that defense is filled with, and I've talked with Mike Gundy about this as well, it's filled with kind of like COVID seniors, fifth-year, sixth-year guys that have played a ton of football. And they were able to use that experience to change the look. So what Caleb was seeing in the first half and what Lincoln was seeing in the first half was not what they were seeing in the second half. And they were able to confuse him. And then the other thing that they were able to do is that they were able to shut down the run game. And once Oklahoma can't run the ball, and this has been proven out in previous games as well, Baylor a game I did, Iowa State a game that I did, Caleb Williams is not a great drop-back passer. He wasn't seeing the field very well, and they were able to shut him down. But it really goes back to the fact that that system with Jim Knowles as the coordinator and the veteran players that they have on the field, they deserve all the credit in the world because they were able to constantly change the look and show one thing pre-snap, do something else post-snap, and that changing of the picture was really confusing for Oklahoma.
Okay, so Oklahoma State, if they can beat Baylor for a second time this weekend, and granted, you haven't seen Cincinnati up close, but you watch enough football. Like, if you're in that committee, and let's say Cincinnati beats a Houston, and let's say Oklahoma State beats Baylor, both in close games, who do you pick?
I don't think that you're going to have to pick between the two.
Because Alabama loses.
To be quite honest with you.
Because Alabama.
I think Alabama is not close to Georgia. That doesn't mean that they can't possibly win, because obviously we've seen crazy things happen this year. But just to give you a sense, in just SEC play, Georgia actually has the top scoring offense in the league in just SEC games, not Alabama. So this whole notion that Georgia's defense is finally going to get tested and Bama's offense is so great. Statistically, they've been able to pad their stats against some poor opponents early in the season, and of late, they can't block anybody. Folks, It took a flat Auburn mistake from a game management standpoint with the clock for Alabama to win that game. Bryce Young was brilliant late in that game. For the most part, they couldn't protect him. They couldn't do anything on offense. I mean, anything. And it's not like Auburn's got the best defense in the world. So I really don't think that Alabama's going to win. Therefore, I do believe that there are going to be two, maybe even more spots open. If Georgia wins and if Michigan wins and beats Iowa, that leaves two wide open spots. I believe Cincinnati win and in, and I think Oklahoma State as well, Doug, is win and in this weekend in the Big 12 championship.
Wow, that would be amazing. Okay, where were you yesterday when the news broke?
I was at a brunch. My in-laws are in town. And we, you know, I wake up and we went to church, me and the boys and my wife and the in-laws. And then we went over and we were having brunch. And it was like right when we sat down and my phone buzzes and it's Bruce Feldman. And he was like, hey, heads up, Lincoln, USC. And I was like, what? And honestly, God's honest truth, that was the first time I had heard one whisper of it.
Really?
And within 5 minutes, it was done.
Okay, so here's what's interesting about it. So I cut my teeth doing Oklahoma City radio, so I still do it a couple times a week with my guy Mark Rogers. And they were all talking about LSU, and I had said for the last month, like, I don't know why anybody's talking about LSU. USC is the better job. USC is the best job in the Pac-12, and Oklahoma was the best job in the Big 12. It's not in the SEC. Like, why wouldn't USC make sense? And yet, you're right. There wasn't really talk of Lincoln. Okay, so when you see it, now your brain starts working. What do you think?
Well, you know, after you kind of wrap your head around, I guess, the shock of it, I immediately tried to think to myself, like, well, why would he do this? And all these reasons started rolling through my head, SEC being one of them. And then I just started to think to myself, I just don't think OU was going to be willing to match what USC was going to put out there. I did know, while I hadn't heard Lincoln's name, I did know through very, very reliable sources that it was a blank check at USC. Like, blank check. So as soon as I heard that, I thought to myself, he's north of $100 million. There's no doubt. And at some point, you look at it, if you're Lincoln Riley, he's not even 40 years old, and they're willing to offer him over $100 million.
Yeah.
At some point, you think to yourself, like, well, at that point, it doesn't matter if OU or USC is, quote, the better job or program. You're probably looking at a delta of somewhere in the $50 million range in terms of guaranteed money. I mean, I think that's what it ultimately came down to. And I have heard, although I can't confirm, right, Doug, that there was a lot of little nuggets thrown into the contract. Not only was it north of $100 million, I'm hearing $110 million. But I also heard that they had clauses in there that they were going to buy both of his homes outright for well over what they were worth, that they were going to buy his home here in Los Angeles, and that budget was going to be well north of $6 million, that there's all sorts of private plane hours in there. So I think at some point Lincoln Riley sat there and looked at his wife and his two young girls and was like, listen, we have to go do this. Last thing that I thought about, and I thought, you know, This is the most interesting part, I guess, from a football perspective, is here's a guy who had been handed a great program.
Right.
And while I'm sure he was very thankful for that, I wonder, and I'm going to ask him, I'm going to sit down with him tomorrow for an interview, but Doug, I'm going to ask him how much of this was about trying to go forge your own path. And
this is a rebuild,
right? I mean, if he's able to do it at USC, this is going to be all on his accord.
Yes, yes. And I would tell you that, like, and you know this because you cover it and you realize it, like, he, as much as Bob gave him the keys to an incredible program, that program was a mess defensively when he took over, right? And this was supposed to be the year where it paid off, but they changed in terms of their investment in the defensive line and getting better there, right? And recruiting a higher level of athlete. It's actually one of the reasons they're so disappointing was all that work in recruiting now had come to fruition in terms of the guys had matriculated, been in the program a little bit, right? And so that's actually what he needs to do at SC. Of course, the Bryce Youngs are going to stay home now. That makes sense. But the difference in USC now and USC then is they used to have two deep and all of them were pros in the offensive and defensive line. And now they have none. Now they have none, and that is a big challenge. But yes, now he puts the flag in the ground. It's not, oh yeah, Bob Stoops handed him the program. It's he took over a program that's in disarray and has a chance to not only stabilize it, but get it back to its peak.
Totally. Totally. And I think what people fail to realize, and I know that he's not a defensive hire, but Alex Grinch was on the plane. I'm sure you've talked about that, you know, the defensive coordinator. And he's got West Coast ties and did a marvelous job for Mike Leach at Washington State.
Yeah.
But so he's coming. But I think what people fail to realize about the quote-unquote glory years, and you and I are right in it, right? I mean, like, listen, all of you and I's neighbors are USC people. So I hear this all the time. I just, you know, they're talking about – all they talk about is offense and Reggie and Matt and, you know, Sark got the job and Lane got the job, and it was always about offense and offense and offense. And, yes, this is an offensive hire. When Pete was great, that was a great defense. People totally fail to realize this. The reason they lost in 05 is their defense was suspect.
Yeah,
they couldn't stop Vince Young.
Yeah,
they couldn't stop anybody. The years prior to that, they were a top 10 defense in college football. And even in the years kind of subsequent after that, when they had great years and won Rose Bowl, they were a top 10 defense in college football. And I think that they can and potentially will get back to that level. I will tell you this. I think that with the current structure of college football, how it is, and the transfer portal, and what he can do in recruiting just in his own backyard, I firmly believe that Southern Cal, USC, is within 3 years of being a national championship contender.
I don't know. I mean, you got to do a lot of damage in the portal and on the lines, right? Like that's where it's, and that to me seems harder. I don't know. How much? Because if skill position guys, they transfer much more readily, it feels like, than linemen transfer. But I'm with you. If you can get it going, the league is the part about the league that nobody talks about is Cal being down. Really, really. Cal is usually a program that has dudes, right? Stanford is down. Washington fired their coach. Like, yeah, you can tell me that Oregon's up, but everybody else, you know, UCLA was fine this year. I think they'll be good and solid with Chip. But everybody else is essentially down. And it's not easy, but it'll be easier to get your footing because the league is not at its peak the way some other leagues are at their peak.
I would also say that I think that there are not nervous people elsewhere, but I've talked to at length with guys like Urban Meyer, and when he first got the Florida job, you know, he would tell us, like, you know, when I first got Florida, people would ask me out there, like, hey, you know, you were just at Utah. Do you have West Coast ties? Like, can you you know, figure that window out, that envelope out? And he said to him, everybody, guys, Pete Carroll's at USC. There's no reason to go west.
Yes.
There's no reason. And so I look at all of those guys that are from Southern California that are playing in the SEC or the ACC and everything, or even for Ohio State. And I wonder to myself, how readily are those guys going to be able to come in and get these guys out from Southern California if Lincoln Riley is able to get it going?
Right. No, right? they were going to get Bryce, if not for the fact that it was just such a mess, you know, with every USC fan, you know, wanting a coaching change 2 years ago. You know, right? I mean, and
it's fascinating to me. Like, what does this do? What's the chain reaction
totally.
To the powers in the South out of
look,
this?
Look, here's
look
the,
at
here's
the guys in Southern Cal that are out there playing. C.J. Stroud, Chris Olave at Ohio State.
Well, it's not just that. It's and this happens in every league. Like, I like to use this as the Michigan State example, right? Like, Tom Izzo at Michigan State has always been great. But in order to get that thing going, people forget Michigan was on probation. Right. They couldn't. You weren't beating Michigan. I nearly went to Michigan State, Tom Izzo's first recruiting class. I was supposed to visit with Tractor Trailer and Albert White, who ended up going to Michigan because you couldn't beat Michigan if you're at Michigan State back then. Then they got on probation and all of a sudden things change. Right. Like the rise of Oklahoma State in the Big 12. What is it coincided with when Texas is screwed up? Now, all of a sudden, you can win in that league if USC is right. You ain't getting in here and getting any of the five stars. They're all going there. And the difference between USC and all the rest of the West Coast schools, maybe Oregon is the side, is USC has those alums, those guys that live all around us, and they will do whatever it takes, name, image, and likeness, right? They'll do whatever it takes. Whereas that's not really – Stanford has alums with billions. They don't spend – they're not doing name, image, and likeness. Cal, they're all scientists and doctors, and they're not into it, right? UCLA, kind of same thing. A little bit of arrogance of the UCs. USC, like, they don't care. We won't be good at football. Tell us, here's a blank check. Tell me how much it costs to get the coach. Tell me how much it costs to get the players. And now they can do it legally.
I totally agree. And like you were saying, the chain reaction to this, I think, is going to be felt across college football. I just don't think that you're going to be able to come into the Pac-12 footprint. I'm even interested in guys like JT Tuimoloau, who is a top five recruit from the Washington area and went to Ohio State. Emeka Abuka, the number one wide receiver in the country out of the Seattle area, went to Ohio State. Like, are you going to be able to go in and get those kids out of the Pac-12 footprint if USC starts to become a flagship? I mean, the question remains to be seen. So I think that the ripples from this are going to be far-reaching across college football. And as somebody that has covered the sport for a long time and you know, played in, I guess, the western part of the country, and in particular when USC was good, I would make the argument that college football desperately needs a West Coast power, needs a West Coast power to balance some things out. And if this is a path to that, then I think it's going to be better for everybody involved.
That's a great point. And you make a lot of great points. Can't wait to see the show, which clarifies everything on college football. You can see it on social media. You can see it on Fox Sports 1. Of course, watch him next weekend call the game of the week. Joel, thanks so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, Doug. Have a good one, bud.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. The press.
Meyer, sorry I pinched you on time. Thought Klatt was great. Get in when you can get in.
Yes. Tiger Woods speaking with Golf Digest. This is what he had to say when it comes to what happened when he suffered that leg injury in that car accident last February.
There was a point in time when, I wouldn't say 50-50, but it was damn near there, but I'm not, I was going to walk out of that hospital with one leg.
That's how severe it was for Tiger, who added this on his rehab.
I've had some really tough days, some really hard weeks, some setbacks here and there. And part of the rehab process, we pushed a little bit and a few setbacks, but overall, everything's progressing nicely. But it's just not at my timetable. I just wish I could do actually everything that I used to be able to do, but it's just not quite there yet.
Yeah, says he's not halfway there in the rehab, and says it's not realistic for him to get to the top of Mount Everest again, considering what he's coming back from.
I think that's like the most reasonable statement anybody's ever made. It's not going to stop him from trying. Right?
Sure.
Not to stop him from trying, but I'm fascinated by Tiger if and when he plays professional golf at all again. I'm with him. I don't think it's on a regular basis, but he'll play the Masters for sure. What else you got?
Texas Rangers and Corey Seager came to terms on a 10-year, $325 million deal. And Max Scherzer of the Mets finalizing that 3-year, $130 million deal that will pay Scherzer $43 million annually.
Okay, so help me out. The Rangers signed the highest paid shortstop in Major League Baseball? Where have I seen that before? Oh, yeah.
And this note from the NFL, Christian McCaffrey done for the year. Dalvin Cook injured but not done for the year. Deebo Samuel going to miss a little time because of a groin strain. And Mike McCarthy has COVID.
COVID, yeah.
And that's the press.
Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
Fire, great job handling like a champ. Real credit card questions require real people. Someone who understands your issues and wants to work to resolve them for you. That's why Discover offers helpful U.S.-based representatives available 24/7. Discover exceptionally common sense. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show.